Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Bretall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 167 for comics originally released on October 20th, 2010. Now, starting us off in DC is Justice League of America number 50. It's a giant size issue, and it's got the Crime Syndicate. I'm a big fan of the Crime Syndicate. I just think they're a fun group. So I was looking forward to this.
Fun in that they murder people and such.
Well, it's fun to see a alternate take on the core Justice League. And it wasn't until I saw the cover, which is a nice wraparound cover, that it really dawned on me that what we're getting here, particularly with the current lineup of the Justice League, is we're getting, you know, the quote-unquote real Superman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, Flash, and Batman of that other world in the form of Ultraman, Superwoman, Power Ring, Johnny Quick, and Owlman going up against essentially their sidekick counterpart almost, you know, in Supergirl, Donna Troy, you know, Dick Grayson as Batman, Jesse Quick, and Jade. So, I mean, to a certain degree, you know, the Crime Syndicate just had a huge advantage going in. So, you know, I was looking forward to this, and had kind of mixed feelings on parts of it, to be honest. Overall, I thought it was a good issue, and, you know, I loved some of the little bits they had in places, the little lines about, you know, is Jesse Quick, you know, trading up from the JSA? And I liked her response to that question. So they had some good character moments here. I didn't expect the tangent Green Lantern character to show up, and I thought that was kind of cool. Didn't think she did a whole lot other than some expository dialogue. But this was one where having the extra pages really helped give them some room for some character stuff, give them room for the, frankly, the really extended fight sequence they had, and just do some cool multiversal stuff. So what did you think of it?
I liked it as a story. It doesn't feel like the Justice League to me. It feels, I don't know, it's almost like, you know, when you got the Detroit League, you know, but even then, at least they had, like, Aquaman and Zatanna hanging around. And it just seems like it's the Teen Titans or something, you know, it's just...
Well, it very much is.
Or the Titans, whatever you want to call them. I mean, it just doesn't feel Justice League-y, you know, in the Justice League book. And I appreciate the fact that, you know, you have essentially analogs to all the, you know, big core members of the Justice League, but it just doesn't feel the same.
No, I would agree with that. And it comes down to we have analogs to the core Justice Leaguers. We don't have any core Justice Leaguers in this issue. You know, and every one of these characters we've got here, you know, in the Justice League has been a Titan, including, I think, Jesse Quick, although I could be wrong on that. And, you know, I agree with where you're at and where you're coming from on that in terms of is this really the Justice League or not. Yeah, and again, I can't disagree with it. I've got that same feeling. You know,
I didn't mind the story. You know, I thought it was a good story. It was good action. It was well told. I liked the art. You know, it had good pacing and all that. It's just, and you know, what would be curious is maybe some of the listeners can, you know, shoot us a line or post on the forums. It's just, you know, how does it feel to anybody out there who's reading the Justice League, you know, this incarnation of it? I mean, does it feel like the Justice League or do you feel like you're reading something else? I'm a little bit curious as to where DC's going with it because it seems like, I'm trying to gather my thought here and like what I want to say. It's just they don't seem to have been able to be successful, really successful with the main Justice League in a while. I mean, they had a little bit of a go with it with Brad Meltzer. Dwayne McDuffie came on. I thought he told some good stories, but I mean, he was getting interfered with left and right, you know, and just after a certain period of time, people just storytellers just seem to run out of steam with those core leaguers, and they, do something funky. It's kind of like when way back when they got tired, or the Justice League wasn't selling well, and they went to the Detroit League, right?
Well, it's funny you mention that, because I could not help but compare this issue and this storyline to right around issue 200, specifically I think around 205, 206, 207, when they had the crime syndicate appearing there. And that was a few years before the whole Detroit era, but really not that much before. We were getting a lot of the satellite, Justice Leaguers, Firestorm, Elongated Man, those characters were getting a bit more of the limelight than Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. And, I mean, part of the parallels for me, not just, hey, there's the crime syndicate, but there was aspects of just the way the cover felt, the way the extended fight sequence was. That was around the time George Perez was drawing, and I couldn't help but think, this is a really cool fight sequence, but man, if Perez was drawing it, we'd see them knocking down some cool trophies, there'd be Easter eggs, and it would feel more grounded in the JLA headquarters. And part of that's just a different storytelling style of George Perez versus, Mark Bagley. And Bagley's a great artist. He did a good job here, too. And the storytelling style of just the time. And it seems like back then, they didn't necessarily focus on the big guns, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, etc. Yet it didn't feel like they were ignoring them either. Whereas now, I think part of the problem with focusing on Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman in a book like the Justice League is, first off, in Batman's case, he's got about 15,000 books just, every month coming out under the Batman office. Superman and Wonder Woman are both relegated to a single title, and to a certain extent, not even necessarily showing up in those titles to a degree. I mean, we've got a alternate Wonder Woman showing up there. We've got Superman pacing around the U.S. So when DC keeps taking their main characters and either killing them off temporarily, throwing them off world, kicking them to an alternate timeline history or, whatever, and getting them off limits to a team book like the Justice League. And again, like you were mentioning with McDuffie and the interference and stuff, that really put him in an awkward position. And I think he told some really good stories. But there comes a point of how many times can you rework these plot lines you're trying to get going when Hawk Girl dies, now she's not dead, but you can't use her, and all this other stuff going on. So, editorially, I think they make having the Justice League that we all kind of envision as the Justice League of Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, Green Lantern, either Aquaman, Martian Manhunter, or whoever else you see as the rounding out that team, is fundamentally difficult to do because those characters don't have the stability and the accessibility to the creative team for the Justice League book to make that work. I kind of felt like they almost addressed that issue in this story. Because if you go to the staple, there's a discussion between Ultraman and Owlman talking about Power Ring and Johnny Quick and how the originals are back, and they're kind of like, well, what's going on here? And I thought it was a cool kind of a reference and parallel to Barry Allen and Hal Jordan returning and all that stuff, but it's kind of a we're not in control of our destiny kind of a feeling for those characters, which I've got to imagine, Robinson writing this may be feeling to a degree of, well, I can't use the fun characters, I've got to just scrounge up a new team from whatever I can grab. And that's something that isn't new to the Justice League. Again, we saw that in the Detroit era.
Oh, sure. And I, like I said, I can appreciate that, the need to do that. And like I said, the story's a perfectly fine story. It just didn't feel leaguey, but there's not a whole lot you can do about that right now, which, as you say, Batman's dead and coming, Bruce Wayne anyway is dead and coming back, and Superman's wandering around, and Wonder Woman is, off doing whatever Wonder Woman's doing. And you just don't really have that ability to have, the Trinity in here. Fair enough story. And I think bringing in the crime syndicate was a good idea because that, you're at least getting some iconic, cool villains for them to fight.
I also liked how not only did they bring them back, but they referenced one or two of their appearances in the meanwhile, you know, the last couple of years we've seen. They also referenced Donna Troy's, you know, adventures over in Countdown, which I was glad to see they acknowledged it and didn't dwell on it and just kind of moved on from that. But it's nice to see the sense of continuity and how that can build into a story versus, you know, just kind of ignoring it or seeing it as a detrimental thing.
Yeah, another thing I wanted to just point out is, you notice on the front cover you got this approved by the Comics Code Authority.
Yes.
Does that mean anything anymore? I mean, it's like, you got, like, Power Princess, like, having sex with Owlman on a pile of money. She's, like, standing around, like, naked in one panel. It's like, that doesn't seem like it's, I mean, I don't care personally, you know. It's just, you know, it's not like a book that you want to hand to, like, a 8-year-old or something, you know.
Yeah, it is kind of surprising it passed the comic code.
I mean, do they even look at these things? Or oh, it's a DC book, stamp.
In theory, they do, but, you know, it's been a while since I've actually read through what they're, in theory, checking for. And some of that's, you know, a half century old, you know, of what they thought was corrupting the youth back then. Maybe that, I don't know. Again, looking again at that scene, it's like, how does that pass that?
It was just curious to me, you know. It's like, yeah, I'm not going to get bent out of shape over or anything. It was
it's a good question, though.
If nothing else. You know, for, like, I'm like going by that, and I'm like, look at the cover, and I go, oh, it's on there. Very small and hard to read, but...
I didn't even notice that. What got me with the art was kind of the lack of backgrounds in places. And that wasn't a big deal. It didn't detract from the story, but I couldn't help but think about how there could have been another layer added to the story if it had had some of the cool Easter eggs in the background and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But again, Bagley went through and did the entire issue, and this is not a short issue. I didn't actually count the pages, but, you know, from his work on Ultimate Spider-Man, he has proven himself as just a unbelievable ability to churn out pages at an amazing rate with good solid quality throughout. One of the things about this issue that just annoyed me was the constant cutting back to, well, an hour ago, here's what was going on. And, I mean, I get why they did that, whatever. It just seemed like a artificial way to reveal certain information at a convenient time in the pacing of the book versus, you know, just lay it out in chronological order or whatever.
Okay, I just did a quick count, and there's 46 pages. I mean, I might have been off by a couple, but it's at least double length.
Yeah.
No, I give it a good score, though. I mean, I gave it a 4 out of 5. As a comic book, 4 out of 5. You know, I had no complaints about the story, about the art, anything. Just more of a philosophical level of, you know, it just didn't feel like the Justice League.
I can see that. I also gave it a 4 out of 5. There were a couple of things that you know, again, had it gone that extra mile or whatever, I might have been able to give it the 5 if I just kept going through and thinking there was more I could dig out of the backgrounds or whatnot and stuff. And again, very solid 4 out of 5, very good story. And it was one of those that as I was reading through, I'm thinking, wow, you know, it'd be cool if we could see like the other Green Lantern Corps equivalents from the Crime Syndicate's universe or, you know, whatever did happen to Talon, who showed up in the Titans at one point. Wasn't he supposed to be Owlman's sidekick? And it showed kind of the richness and depth of the DC multiverse that, frankly, DC has kind of squandered since Final Crisis. You know, and I'm curious what's going to go on with Dr. Impossible and these, I don't know, newer gods or whatever they are. So it was one that not only did I enjoy the story, but it's got me curious as to what's going forward and hoping that they explore aspects of these corners of the DC universe and multiverse. You know, that sometimes they just don't.
Right.
The one thing that does have me a little worried is this Omega Man storyline that they just started here. Apparently is going to be going on for a good couple of months. Looking at the solicits for January, there's a ton of things tying into it, it looks like. Not as bad as, say, Marvel does with Shadowland and some of that stuff, but it looks like it could be a fairly big storyline. versus just a really good arc for this book. So I'm a little, I don't want to say skeptical, but wondering if they're trying to milk more out of it than maybe they should.
I didn't even notice that. I'll have to look when I look at the solicits next. So I'm going to move on to our Marvel book.
Yeah.
We've got Carnage, number one. Zeb Wells and Clayton Crane. As I'm reading this book, I was a little curious because Carnage isn't actually in it until like the last page. It's, you know, Spider-Man and Iron Man. And you kind of know, you pick the book up off the rack and it's called Carnage and you got Spider-Man and Iron Man on the cover. It's like, okay.
Yeah, it's kind of odd when the title character doesn't even rate being on the cover of the first issue of the book. You know, it's like, okay, and that definitely set the scene. You're right, the guy, you know, the symbiote doesn't even show up to the last page. And there's nothing right or wrong about that, but I think Carnage, to a degree, can be a hard sell at times. Him not showing up for the first issue and this feeling very much like all setup didn't really put me in the right frame of mind.
It's funny, because it just, marketing-wise, I mean, there was a point when Venom and Carnage were really popular, you know, back in the, it was the late 90s, right?
Yeah.
Venom seemed to have three or four books out, and Carnage was running around everywhere, and it was just very popular. And, you know, I was wondering, are they playing off that? Because it just seems like, well, Spider-Man and Iron Man are very popular, too. You know, you have Spider-Man and Wolverine as a book. It just seems like maybe working Spider-Man and Iron Man somehow into the title, or just giving it like a general title. Well, that, which is actually what I assume it to be. You know, now that I read this, Carnage is maybe more,
there will be Carnage,
yeah,
not the character Carnage.
Or, you know, they're going to do something with Carnage, as opposed to it's like the self-titled book, because it's obviously in this issue wasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Clayton Crane's art. He's got a very unique style.
I liked his art, but there were kind of two aspects of the art. There was the part he was actually drawing, and then there was aspects that was very clearly computer done.
Right.
You know, the buildings, the vehicles, some of that stuff. Now, when they show off the robotic arm near the beginning, that may have been computer done, but it was appropriate and looked really cool. I like that. But there were aspects of some of the rest of this that were a little off-putting, in some cases quasi-photorealistic, but not quite. It felt a little cold and sterile in places, and I usually don't have that reaction to Clayton Crane's art. This had a bit too much of a computer-generated feel to the art.
That's fair enough. I was going to say, anyone who's like a fan of some of the classic, you know, you got the doppelganger in this issue running around. You got Shriek, old Spidey villain, makes an appearance. And there's actually some good Tony Stark Iron Man moments in here, too. Especially, you know, versus that Michael Hall guy. You know, the other, I guess, industrialist, you know, genius kind of guy, but he's not that smart, so how is he doing this stuff? And we'll find out, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely had some good character moments. Once we get a ways past the staple and we get the other two characters flying in with their armor suits or whatever, of Royal Blue and Firebrick, I saw that and I'm like, yeah, I guess all the good names are taken. And then these guys, I mean, the outfits aren't too bad. They, you know, have a decent design to them. The color coding of them, of course, instantly gives them a Power Rangers kind of a feel. Nothing right or wrong about that, but it felt a little, I don't know, and again, that was one of those things where the computer-generated building behind it and some of that, the art didn't work for me. I don't know, there were aspects of it that left me cold. It was one of those that the story isn't bad, but it didn't work for me as well as I think it could have, and I'm not entirely sure why that is, you know? One of the things that has me concerned about this going forward is I felt not only was this heavy on setup and starting the story versus really getting it underway to any degree, was on the text page at the end, the mention that this was going to be coming out every 2 months. I really didn't feel like this issue had enough momentum to kind of bridge a two-month gap between issues. And it has me a little concerned of when I get that next issue, am I even going to remember what happened in this one?
Yeah, and you know, so this is going to be stretching out over, and you know, figure there'll be some kind of delay somewhere along the line. It'll take about a year for this five-issue series to come out.
Yeah.
I mean, even on time, it'll take 10 months, so.
Yeah, I mean, June next year would be best case when this might end. So, I guess part of it for this is some stuff happened in this issue, but it lacked any kind of a motivating context, and I didn't really care about what was happening because I didn't really know why most of it was happening. You know, it's like, okay, Stark's there, this happens, he calls Spider-Man, yada yada. It's like I get the flow of events, but I didn't get the motivation behind the events, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So this, for me, was a low three. You know, it was a decently constructed story. Technically, it was well executed. It just was a swing and a miss for me to a degree. But it was not a bad story, and I want to be clear on that distinction.
Yeah, and I didn't give it a low three, but I gave it a three. Again, I thought it was a perfectly fine story, but nothing that knocked my socks off. And I do think, you know, it's kind of a peculiar attitude to have. But, you know, when you're reading stuff monthly instead of the folks who just wait until the trade and then they kind of read it all in one shot, I do worry about stuff like, you know, how is this, like you were saying, how is this going to be maintaining its momentum and story momentum from point A to point B?
Yeah.
And it's going to be tough in this book. So move on to our indie book. It's the first of the Stan Lee books from Boom Studios. And this first one is Stan Lee's Soldier Zero. Co-plotted by Stan Lee, written by Paul Cornell, and art by Javier Pina.
What did you think of this one?
This is a book that, I mean, I came in kind of wanting to like it a lot, you know, and it kind of skated off the top of my head. I mean, I just got a feeling that there needed to be more of something in this issue to carry me on for the next one. Now, I only have to wait a month for the next one, and it's not something that I'm going to be I'm not on the fence about it or anything. I mean, I liked it fine. I just didn't love it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's something that I gave it a three, which means it's a perfectly good comic book. It's, you know, it's got a good enough story, good enough storytelling. I got a little bit of a, I don't know, kind of like an Exo Manowar kind of feel off of the guy. And I'm not, you know, just with the super suit from outer space kind of thing, and it's like not even a 100% apt analogy. It just seems like, you know, you got this alien in this suit, and somehow it's merged with this guy, this soldier from Earth, and something's going to happen, but the whole issue came up to that point, you know, and you kind of end with, you know, not Stuart Soldier Zero, and it's like this combination of the two. Not really sure how that's going to go. So again, I think it might grow on me as I get more story, but this is the kind of thing that, you know, having one of those extra long first issues might have served this well. Because there was a lot of setup in it, and a lot of background material, a lot of interesting, you know, character stuff, but it just seemed like so much was spent on that background material that I just didn't get the necessary story momentum that really has me excited about getting another, you know, about next issue. I didn't pick it up saying, wow, I don't ever want to look at this again. But I, at the same time, didn't pick it up saying, wow, I can't wait to see next issue.
I can see that. From my vantage point, there was a certain old school style to this issue, which anything created by Stan Lee, I think that's an easy kind of a, oh, well, it's going to have it. I didn't think it had an old school Stan Lee style to a degree. And I don't mean old school in a bad way. I think to a certain degree, I would hold up some of the early 80s stuff as a high watermark for comics to a a certain degree. This one, there was something about it that kind of reminded me of the original Firestorm number one in some respects. And I'm speaking more in the structural manner of an opening origin story. Get to know the characters, at the end they get the powers, and the next issue we'll go see what they do with them, kind of a feel. I thought the art here was good, better in places than others, you know, but solid throughout. It told the story well, and I liked the art. In terms of the character design for Soldier Zero, a little too almost monochromatic of just the red and the white, a little heavy on the white. Almost a Power Rangers kind of a vibe to the costume design. Frankly, I'm fine with that. I like the Power Rangers. What can I say? So I see that in practically everything I'm reading this week, apparently. I felt we got to know the lead character, Stuart, fairly well in this issue. Not necessarily everything about him, and some of it was a little expository in nature, almost. I felt it was a little overstated about how being in a wheelchair doesn't mean you're helpless and all that stuff. Not to the point of being preachy, but, you know, there were like four or five scenes that all kind of hinged around some of that, and I don't have any problem with that. I don't think that's either unrealistic or anything of the sort, but, you know, I was starting to feel Stuart's frustration with that aspect, if there's more to him than just the chair. There were parts of the story that I felt were just a little unclear, particularly towards the end. You know, is Stuart in control of the armor? Is it control of him? You know, what's going on there? What's really the story behind that armor?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. And is it just armor, or is there a guy in it and he's merged with it, you know, which is a good point. You know, I was assuming that there was some guy in it and they've somehow merged, although at the same time it could just be, you know, a techno suit kind of like Blue Beetle Scarab or something. And he's now merged with that.
Or it could be the guy in the suit died. The thing that really had me confused was when I was looking at that shot of Stuart in the armor for the first time with him standing there. And if you look at his left hand, it only has three fingers instead of five.
Mm-hmm. Well, his legs are kind of weird, too. I mean, it's got like, he doesn't, the joints are, you know, kind of like
horse
or something like that, which, you know, you're assuming is sort of like, you know, the alien anatomy or whatever. And you see that in the, you know, the previous shots.
But what got me is only his left hand has the three fingers. The right hand is still the normal human type.
And it's funny because when you look on the second page, both hands have three fingers.
Yeah.
So, you know, is it, you know, is that kind of a sign that, you know, there has been that kind of a merger, you know, in that you have one hand that is, you know, because it's very clear that there's five fingers on the right hand.
Yeah. The captions when he's in the suit of, you know, is it him talking? Is it the suit talking? Is it the alien talking? Kind of a, there were aspects with the dialogue and the captions that I wasn't quite clear who I was hearing. And again, it's first issue, some of this will be revealed later, I'm fine with that. It's one of those where normally getting this far into a thing, or at the end of the thing, it's first issue, it's, oh, he's got the powers, and, okay, next issue, we'll pick it up from there. Normally that kind of bothers me. It didn't really bother me here. I found the story enjoyable enough, I was happy enough with the art. I mean, the art here really clicked with me. The story I thought was good. I want to see where they go. I'm willing to give them a little bit of time. And it didn't feel like a, I'm not quite sure how to phrase it. I don't want to say it didn't feel like a part one of whatever, because it kind of did. But it didn't feel like it was padded to get up to here. It felt like we needed this amount of time to get to know Stuart, to actually care about him when he gets, you know, with the armor and stuff like that. It's a little cliche to, okay, he's in the wheelchair, and now he's got superpowers, so gosh, he's going to like just being able to walk again. You know, things like that. But I also liked how, okay, he was a soldier, he was injured, but, you know, he was just driving along. It, you know, not like he did anything super heroic in that respect or anything like that. So I felt this had, again, some cliche, some parts that were good and interesting. And the mix overall worked well for me. I do want to see where they go with this. Do I think this is something that is necessarily going to be around 2 years from now? I don't know. Again, I liked it. I think they're doing a good job on this and, you know, giving it, again, solid art, really good writing, good concept. I like that Boom is trying to create some new properties, and they're trying to do it, you know, with Stan Lee's help, who, again, he created the Marvel Universe. This is something that doesn't have, I think, the downsides of a lot of what people might expect out of a Stan Lee kind of a thing of, is it going to be overly dated, a bit kitschy and cliche or whatever? To me, if this didn't have Stan Lee's name plastered all over it, I don't think there was anything in it that would make me think, gosh, this is just a wannabe Stan Lee story, you know? So I liked it. Again, I give it a 3. I want to see where it goes. I think it could go either, you know, up in quality or down in quality over time. But I doubt it'll do it radically and unexpectedly. I think it'll either grow in a direction I really like and enjoy or grow in a direction that I just don't care for.
You know, Paul Cornell, you know, he tells good stories in general. I'm looking forward to seeing where he goes. It's just, for me, I thought, you know, it's just a personal thing. It's not a indictment of the work. It just, you know, personally, it felt like the pacing was a little off in it. And, you know, as I hear you talk about it, I don't disagree that I think you need some of that background for Stewart prior to him getting merged into the Soldier Zero, because, you know, you can't really do that as much afterwards unless it's in flashback and stuff, and just seeing how he, as a normal, you know, guy, interacts with these different people and, you know, the girl and all this kind of stuff. I think that's, you know, important for building his character. But, you know, having the 23 pages to work in, it might have been good if it was 30 pages. You know, having a little bit extra so that you can have that necessary background information, but then take it a little notch further and get a little bit of exploration of the Soldier Zero and kind of leave it at a cliffhanger there.
I can see that. I think leaving it on a stronger note would have helped. And I agree that there was a lot that kind of led up to that scene near the end, and that could have been tighter and a little bit compacted down if they needed to, and it probably would have benefited from that. But again, I'm looking forward to seeing what the other Stan Lee books are too, and seeing how they turn out for Boom.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to the one that Mark Waid's doing with him.
Yeah.
That'll be out next. We have a little bit of a preview of it here in the back. That's The Traveler.
I actually made a point of not reading that because I want to wait to get the whole issue and go from there.
Yeah, I've actually already read it. I read it before I did the interview with Mark, you know, a month or so ago, or a couple of months ago, I guess now. But, you know, so I didn't read it again here. So what else did you read this week? We're recording early again because I'm going to the Long Beach Comic Con.
Well, we're recording early, and I spent Tuesday night crunching the numbers for September, so I've only read a handful of items. And as I usually do, I started with DC and only made it through some DC books. So for this section of the kind of the lightning round, if you will, of stuff, if people notice a tendency for me to be DC heavy, it's like, oh, yeah, it's going to happen. So first up, Power Girl 17. Really enjoyed the interplay between Power Girl and Batman, Dick Grayson and stuff. And it was just a fun pairing. I really think the way that they treat Dick Grayson as kind of the object of affection for every major, you know, female character at times in the DC Universe can be actually a lot of fun. I think they could do a story in which he just goes missing, and the Birds of Prey and every other female character, it's like, okay, we got to go find the guy, you know. It makes for some fun dynamics. Didn't really care for the puzzling ending, but it looks like it should make for a really interesting next issue. So overall, I gave it a high 4. I thought it was good stuff. Again, I really liked how Power Girl the series started. Not overjoyed that they've kind of gotten rid of Tara and the other supporting cast, whatever. But I think Judd Winnick is actually doing some surprisingly good stuff here, and probably some of the best stuff he's done since, I'm going to say, some of his early work on Exiles. I read Legion of Superheroes number 6. It was a good issue, but frankly, I'm ready for the focus to move off of Earthman onto some of the other Legionnaires. I loved seeing the Legion Academy in the backup story. I just love that aspect of the Legion. Again, that was another 4 out of 5 for me. It was good. I read DC Universe Legacies number 6. I thought it was an okay issue, not brilliant. This is right around the time of Crisis and all of that stuff. And frankly, it looks like Changeling missed out on being on the Justice League just by not being in the right place at the right time. Which, that's the kind of thing that if they had just simply not drawn him in a single panel, I would have had no problem with that story. But it just, it nagged at me for the whole thing. He's there at the start of the fight, not at the end when the team forms. It's like, what the heck? Did not care for the backup story in that at all. It was a humorous tale that felt really kind of out of place in a miniseries that's essentially delineating the official timeline of the DC Universe. So that, again, that didn't work for me. Overall, I gave it a 3. Maybe I'm being a little harsh. I don't know. I'm curious to see how the framing sequence really ties up on that series when it ends. I read Brightest Day 12. It was a good issue, but this is getting to where they've got a number of plot lines that are going too many issues between updates for it to have the story momentum I'd really like. It feels like they've got too much story and not enough pages every other week. And Dove's appearance in this issue made me realize we're really not seeing much of her over in Birds of Prey the last couple of issues. They make a big to-do of Hawk and Dove joining that team, and then it feels like, oh yeah, I guess they are on that team. Again, really enjoying Brightest Day. I think it's certainly not a perfect story because of the number of threads they're doing and how much they've got to go between them, and it's hard to keep all of that in play. I think the flaw is in the inherent structure, not in the execution. It's good. I'm enjoying it. Other thing I read was Green Lantern Corps 53. It was an interesting issue with some backstory on Sinestro and his Corps. Kind of curious about the whole Weaponers backstory, where they're going with all of that. But, you know, for me, it was just kind of a 3 out of 5. So, that's really all I got read so far. I've got a huge stack, probably another 30 or 40 things to read, including a bunch of the Bruce Wayne Road Home and all that stuff. So, I will have plenty to read this weekend.
So, I'm the exact opposite. DC is pretty much the last thing I read, but I'm not going to go over everything I read, but I read first thing out of the box, whenever it's in a box, is The Walking Dead. So Walking Dead 78 was in there, so I read Walking Dead. I read it first. Good issue. You can kind of see how they're winding down the current chapter of Walking Dead, although I was really surprised, again, you know, it's like when 77 ended, and I'm like, okay, well, that's how they're going to end it. And then Kirkman switched it up, and, you know, he did something that I completely didn't expect, but now there's something else that I'm expecting, and we'll see how that plays out. But it does look like he's, and I don't want to give anything away, especially for people who read it only in trade format, or, you know, God forbid they're only watching the TV show, which premieres on Halloween, and it'll be like 4 or 5 years before they get up to this point if they stick to the 2 issues per episode kind of format. I've heard people who've been watching bootleg versions of that first episode on the internet that the first episode pretty much covers the first 2 issues, but I'll watch that Sunday night, which will be last night as this goes.
Quick thing on Walking Dead. You've heard he's going
to... And then...
You've heard he's going to go weekly on that, right?
Well, it's just reprints.
Yeah. I want to know if he's going to be able to get the reprints out weekly.
Yeah.
I have questions.
It's just, he seems to, you know, be doing it where, like, every format I've put this out in, people buy it like maniacs. So if I reprint it yet again, you know, like weekly issues for people who are watching the TV show or something, maybe they'll buy them. You know, it's like, okay, more power to them.
I think it's a great experiment, and I'm really curious how that's going to pan out. Because he could go 2 years weekly before he catches up.
And then I read Kick-Ass 2, Issue 1. I liked it well enough. Curious to see where he's going with this one. You know, it really spotlights for me that Hit Girl is the real star of this series, not Kick-Ass. Kick-Ass is just kind of an irritating punk, as far as I'm concerned. I'm really intrigued by the Hit Girl character, though. But they bring in like a whole extra kind of group of individuals. I won't say super-powered anybody. I don't think anybody has any actual powers, but they bring in a whole extra group of guys that he's hooking up with, and that's going to be interesting to see where that goes. And then Morning Glories. I'm loving this series. I'm still loving it. I just read issue 3, and they kind of switched it up a little bit here. You got some stuff in the far past, and some parallels to the school, and kind of changed direction kind of seriously from the last couple of issues, I thought. But I'm still liking it. It's a good mystery. I'm really interested to see how it's going to pan out. That's pretty much all I wanted to cover. Those are the standouts of what I read. All of those being kind of in the, I probably Walking Dead. I give all of them a high 4, pretty much. Kick Ass, maybe a solid 4. Morning Glories tending towards a 5. I'm really enjoying that series.
Cool.
But that's it for this week. I just got the books yesterday, or no, it's Thursday now, so I got them on Tuesday.
Yeah, that's the issue when we record early. There's just not that much time to be reading the stuff. I've got standing plans on Wednesday nights, and normally Thursdays when I would go through and read, the bulk of the books. So anything else, or does that do it?
It does it for me.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Action Comics number 894 from DC Comics, Ultimate Comics Mystery number 4 from Marvel, and Hellboy Beasts of Burden number 1 from Dark Horse Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.